Let's sit. Let's learn. Let's evolve. Let's talk.
No more whispering in our minds.
Today is Let's Talk Arts with your host, Rachel Sara.
Today I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we are broadcasting, pay my respects to elders past and present, and extend that welcome to all mob who are listening. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk Black Arts. I'm your host, Rachel Sara, and today we're going to do things a little bit differently. I had the absolute honour of facilitating and hosting a panel discussion at BMAC last week on the interconnectedness of First Nations art and healing, and I just thought a lot of the conversations that we had that night were so important to share to a greater audience. So today you are going to hear a pre-recorded live event, and honestly, there are so many gems from this panel, and it was just a really great night to be surrounded by mob. So please enjoy this absolute ripper of a yarn, and this yarn did go for over an hour, so we will be bringing you the episode in two parts, the first part today and the second part next week. So enjoy these yarns, and any key takeaways, we'd love to hear from you on our socials as well. So make sure to tag AAA and hashtag Let's Talk Black Arts.
Hello, everyone. My name is Rachel Sara, and I'm a proud Gurang Gurang woman. Culturally, that means I connect back to the Bundaberg area, but I have lived in Ipswich my whole life. And I also would just like to acknowledge that I am a guest on this country and pay my respects to all mob here, as well as traditional owners and also First Nations people from around the world as well. Tonight, I'm really excited. I am also the Let's Talk Black Arts host at AAA, and this conversation will also be aired on AAA, part of Let's Talk Black Arts, which I'm very excited for a lot of people to hear. I'm not used to being in a room where people can see me. I'm mostly in a room in radio, so it's a nice thing to see people's faces as opposed to just speak to a microphone or my guest in the room. But this conversation is, like we mentioned, the interconnectedness of First Nations art and healing. Personally, as an artist myself, I know how important art can be, and part of the role that we like to play with AAA Let's Talk is the importance of art and design and culture and how that can be such a vessel for change and healing and communication and bringing people together in the sense of community. But I'm so excited to have this deadly group of people here in the room. It's honestly wonderful to have a whole panel of First Nations people. So shout out for all you mob and mob in the room as well. Now, we might just go across the panel and get each of you to introduce yourselves, and Arnie, we'll start with you.
Hi. That was loud. I'm Shantae Bank. I'm a Gurang Gurang Cubby Cubby woman. I also identify as being a Brisbane black, being born in Brisbane, and I've got ties to Brisbane that are very deep, and also South Sea Islander. And I'm happy to be here tonight. I also acknowledge that this is unceded country, that no treaties were ever made, no money was ever exchanged, nothing was thing. This is still Aboriginal land, regardless of written paper.
Period. My name is Alira Fisher. I am a Yiriman, Birri, Cobble Cobble, and South Sea Islander woman as well, Kanakin. Born and raised here in Brisbane, in the outer suburbs though, so grew up in Woodridge, 4114, shout out, and then later on moved to Brisbane North, and that's currently where I live now on beautiful Cubby Cubby lands. Also want to pay respects to Yagara, Turrbal people as well.
Hey everyone, my name is Will Power Uwe. I'm a proud Meriam man with connections to Darnley Island in the Torres Strait. I was born and raised on the country of the languages of the Yugambeh language region, so in Kumbiberi country on the Gold Coast, but I have lived up here as well, so sort of in between. So I want to pay my respects and acknowledge both of those communities. I know there's very close connections, but I feel very privileged to be here on Yugambeh and Turrbal people in the country that we're here on at the moment. So thank you.
Hi everyone, I'm Crystal West. I'm a Meriam woman from Mare Island. I also have connection to Palm Island, so Munburra, and Father's Palawa from Tasmania. I'm a singer-songwriter and blessed and privileged to be here tonight.
Awesome. Thank you, Mob. Now, it's no surprise that everyone here is so talented and so, I guess, all the creativity manifests in different ways as well. And I think the central point to all of that is how much it's steeped in culture, which is part of the reason why we're here today. And we did have a yarn offline last week, and honestly, it went off in so many different tangents trying to put it together, and a conversation that was meaningful but also shined a light on how powerful art and dance and culture and song can be for not only resisting colonization but also shaping a better future as well, which I think each of these people individually do the work that often goes unnoticed. And in that process, there is a lot of sickness, both mentally and physically, that we all have to endure or overcome or heal from. So this conversation really is about exploring the interconnectedness of all of that, similar to what the title itself says. But we did say that we've been dancing since the first sunrise. Alira, that was you offline last week. But what do you think it, or why do you think it's important to recognise that creativity has been so central to, you know, First Nations, land, law, life?
That is a quote that actually Aunty Shantae always says, and I got from her. So I'm going to let you say something first, Aunty, and then I'll carry on from you. Honour you for that quote.
I just think that, as people, we're very adaptable, we're resourceful, we're resilient, and we've had to share it, the way we share and keep story. At times it had to be hidden, and we've been resourceful and adaptable in the way that we share story. Because, you know, when you're getting your language flogged off of you, it's not easy to speak or tell that story. So finding other ways to share a story, I think we've done it really well. We're the longest living culture, so it's, you know, it's certainly still happening. And that them floggers never took our stories away. I always want to acknowledge how strong we are, you know, that resilience. I hate seeing us be sitting in a way where we're sitting in a deficit, because that's not true. It's not true by any part. Because if that was true, we wouldn't be here.
And we still are. And yeah, I guess my take on it too is looking at being a dancer myself. So just, I didn't mention that in my introduction, but I've danced since I was 2 years old. My mum often jokes and says, you were dancing before you walked, constantly just moving around. I often think that through this white Western lens, dance is looked at something that is very performative and competitive, and that's the industry that we're in, unfortunately. But when I think about it from our lens, culturally and spiritually, it's actually something that we all embody. It's a spiritual, it's part of our spirit. And we've all, like we've, as in all of us, community, everybody has been dancing since the first sunrise, and maybe that's just hidden inside of us somewhere, and it's part of, I believe, my purpose to bring that out of everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to add on to that. For me, in my experiences, I sort of work in the music industry, and I'm a bit of an all-rounder, working for a mental health charity in the music industry, and I also support artists like Crystal every now and then and all that kind of stuff. But for me, music or song and dance and those creative practices really, I guess, the core of where we've come from as people in our culture. Like, we don't have all of these sort of written laws or any documented things. Like, in the early days, it all come from songs, dances and practices, and it even it tells us the story of what our ancestors went through, and it teaches us, you know, knowledge so that we can then pass it on to the next generations and keep practicing the way that we've always practiced. It's a way of keeping culture alive, so like in the present, but connects us to the past, and it's going to give us a pathway into the future. So that's how I connect with that sentiment.
I love what you just said about the generations as well. And Crystal, your son's over there being a deadly little onlooker. And we all kind of approach creativity in different ways as well. I'm sure yourself as an individual artist is one thing, but then now being a mother as well and talking about those generations, what is the sort of things that kind of drive you as both an artist and a mother in terms of your creative practice?
So creatively, everything that I sing about, everything that I write about is about culture and identity. And that is very important to me, as it was my grandparents and my ancestors. It's who I am and it's who we are. So for me to nurture that identity, especially in the city, so my people are from, you know, up north, so I'm away from my family. I'm away from my traditional land. So for me to nurture my identity and remember who I am and hold on to who I am as a Black woman, as we do as a collective people, that's important to me because I need to pass that down to my son. I have a responsibility as a Black mother to make sure that my son has those foundations of culture and identity as well. So when I sing, I love singing and it is performative, but it is deeper than that. It's my identity, yeah.
Yeah, I really love that. And I really resonate to that connection to country and culture through distance as well. Like I mentioned, I have grown up in this area, but culturally connect back to Bundi. But I guess all of us kind of have this deep sense of identity and purpose linked to our creative practice. Did you actively choose to have more of a purpose in justice as well? Or was it something that was just kind of placed on you as Mob? Auntie, we might start with you.
Yeah.
Your places.
I think that it has to be, because if we are going to be dutiful civilians or citizens of this country, we have to look at the justice of people around us. And like on the front row, it's Black fellas getting hammered down left, right and centre. So how, you know, when we hold that mirror up to what's happening in community, I'm actually looking at myself first, I'm looking at my family first. And when I don't like that injustice, I know I have to act. Mm-hmm. And because how can I look out when inside can be so perilous? When you think about the violence and other sort of, you know, them sort of acts. So for me, it goes hand in hand. For me to be a good citizen of this country, you know, and I don't mean Australia, I mean a citizen of this that we walk on. Mm. You know, I have to think about that foremost before I think about anything else.
Mm. Yeah. I think, yeah, just adding on to what Anishante said, like whether we like it or not, us in our Blackness and in our bodies and showing up how we do and taking up space is political in itself, and it's resistance in itself, living in the colony. So I think just existing in these spaces is a form of social justice in itself. We're creating new pathways, you know, we're trying to change the lens on things, trying to create new opportunities to pass down, tell our stories how we want to tell our stories, instead of being told how we need to tell our stories. I think us just showing up authentically who we are, and embodying that and bringing our lived experience with us. When I talk about my purpose, I talk about everything that I've been through, all the hardships as part of my story too, and telling that through my creativity so that others can then connect with that, and that can be a part of their journey, whether it's inspiring them or helping them to heal in whatever way. But yeah, so I think just showing up as who we are as Black men and women is the ultimate form of courage and resistance.
And yeah. I remember in our yarn offline as well, you mentioned that first and foremost, you are who you are. You're not your trauma. And also, Auntie, you mentioned not living in that deficit. And I think creative outlets are a way to take back what has been taken from us, but deliver it in a way that is unfiltered. Do you relate to that sort of statement, Will?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Oh, I just got... just about kind of... using your creativity as a way that it's an unfiltered voice without any, yeah.
I think before I want to answer that one, I want to just like pay my respects and deep respect to like all of the creative practitioners that have led the way in our like sort of in that creative space, because there's been so much social change led by them, and they've faced so many hardships to create, you know, the world that we live in today. And of course, their journey continues, and our journeys might look a little bit different. So I want to acknowledge them for paving that way. And I think, you know, at the same time as creative practitioners in these sort of modern days, I have a huge respect for all of us, because when I think about, you know, people getting on stage and telling stories about who they are, where they come from, what they stand for, their values, and even artists and on screen and film and TV as well, like being able to bring in the elements that you are into a domain like that, it takes a lot of courage. So yeah, I've got mad respect to all of those who are able to do that. And you know, I think at the same time I want to sort of add the additional layer that's why I work in that mental health space, because that whole experience can be tiring. It can be a burden. It can, it's like, it's not a, you're not going to get all of this success 100% of the time. It's a constant, like, you know, success trail. It's going to have ups and downs. And so I think when we bring justice into the creative mix and expressing your voice, for me, it's paramount to be really self-aware, acknowledge where the journey's come from, and look after yourself, protect yourself and your values, know when it's time to lean on someone for support and reach out, and keep moving forward like that.
And for those who may not be familiar with a bit more of your background in mental health, can you talk to us a little bit about kind of the intersects of all the work that you do, whether it's mental health, creativity, all of that, and how it kind of comes together?
Yeah, I mean, I guess initially, this is a little story about me. I was working in mental health for a few years prior to Support Act, where I am now. But on the side, I was, you know, doing gigs with Crystal and stuff like that. So I had, I was in the music space as well. And then I've come across Support Act that combines mental health and well-being and music. And, you know, when I learned about them, I was like, oh, that's the perfect job that I want to do, because that's my passions, bringing them together. And I honestly think that there's like that healing and mental health and well-being is so close to music and also all the other creative sort of elements or branches, because ultimately it's the way that we can express ourselves. And like we said earlier in this panel, it's like those are our like song lines, and that's where we've come from. Like we've always expressed ourselves in this way and lived our lives through song and dance and storytelling. So yeah, for me, that's where it connects really, you know, around mental health and well-being and the creative practices. And, you know, not only that, when I bring in more like models that I've learned over the years, we've got the social and emotional well-being wheel, and it's moving away from that clinical practice of like, you know, you get a mental health care plan and you got to, you know, you got to have all of these therapies to treat, you know, what you might be going through at the time. But with the social emotional well-being wheel, it really considers that you've got more elements that, or we've all got more elements that make us who we are. And especially for mob, it's our connection to country, our connection to kin, our connection to family, and then our physical health and our spiritual health, and all around that as well. You know, you've got the social and political determinants that sort of wrap around that. So yeah, I mean, I guess to sum it all up, like, the connection between the two are so strong that they're sort of constantly
entwined,
the same and intertwined. Yeah.
Really big conversation already. And, you know, I think a lot of us grapple with being mob in industries that already has such a disadvantage in many ways. I remember when I went through university, it was kind of like, oh, well, even if you're doing arts, it's not really a real job or anything like that. But we have been telling stories through this creative practice, through song, through dance, through art, through everything. Many of us are the first, you know, mural artists when you think back to the rock art and everything like that. But I guess, Crystal, for yourself, particularly as a black woman in a music industry, it can be quite competitive. And I think in many ways we can be perceived as being too political or not political enough or not the right face. Do you find that those challenges are something that you've experienced, and has that affected your mental health?
Ezekiel wants to say hello.
Hello.
Yeah, like I find that, well, as a singer-songwriter that's performed at multiple, like across the country at multiple different, on multiple different stages, that comes with a variety of different audiences. So sometimes, you know,
laughs and racism.
I'll be like the only black one on stage, and then in the audience there's like a whole heap of non-Indigenous mob, and I get very nervous about that, you know. And I often have yarns with Will, I have in the past, saying like, oh, I'm getting nervous, like these mob in the audience, they're all non-Indigenous people, like what are they going to, you know, think about my songs? I'm all about land rights, stolen land, you know. Especially like my grandfather, you know, Eddie Mabo, like that's, I'm all about land rights and black rights. So being in those spaces are very challenging and confronting. And being exposed to those experiences ongoing definitely can impact your mental well-being, because hold on a minute, sit down please, because it makes me think about who am I and where do I belong in this country. I know where I come from, I know where my people come from, I know my bloodline, but in these spaces, in the creative arts spaces, singing these songs, I don't feel like I belong. When them audiences are predominantly non-Indigenous. Mm. So for that identity to be challenged in that space, it can impact your mental health. But because we're so strong, it always goes back to who am I, where do I come from? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we're living in a landscape where 31 women have had their lives taken from male violence, and a lot of the work that both you do, Auntie and Alira, is in that space. Now, can you talk to me a little bit about why it's so important for you both to create the spaces that you do and how that is connected to culture and art and creativity?
I think that a lot of the healing practices, if we go up the White Way, it's, you know, the drawing to these Western frameworks that have been developed by white men, and these practices do not agree with us. I will say there are some components which can be useful, but one thing I've learned that when it comes to healing, cultural is key. When people start getting a better sense of who they are, that is, you know, and where they come from, that's when they start making different decisions about their own life, because at the end of the day, it's their life choices. When we, and I love the way that we do it, because we do it with a circle of women, we do it in a very natural collective that happens, and it's women who are sharing. And when we create space, you know, we create sacredness just by sitting alongside each other, you know, just by holding space for people to actually tell their stories the way they want to tell them, where they don't have to fucking mask, and you know, because they're worried about docs being stepping in, or they're worried about police being called, or they're worried about this or that. They're just really being vulnerable, having space to show their bare selves without that judgment and without worrying about government interference. And I'm really proud that we're able to create those spaces. You know, because once we start unpacking some of the stuff, then we can start finding our own solutions. You know, we're smart women. You know, I've never met a dumb black woman in my life. And I can honestly say that. I've met some women who have made dumb decisions, but once they have that opportunity to actually have a look, be a bit more informed about what can happen, you know, what change can look like, and they actually see change, because different women within the group are at different levels of change, and they see that progress, and they, you know, what they strive for is up to them, and what they dream for is their dreams. Mm. All we can do is just try and hold that space for that to start.
Mm. Yeah, totally agree with everything Ani's saying, and our group is intergenerational too, which I think is, you know, such an important element of it. I think in the white lens, we're grouped into children, youth, women and families, and our spaces, it's all women and children. And I think that is so important when it comes to healing, because there's so many different, you know, experiences. There's so much different wisdom depending on different age groups. There's different people that you would go to for different things. And we're continuing to follow in the footsteps of our ancestors. That's what they always did, sat together. And I think when we bracket ourselves into groups, I mean, there's benefits in it, but I think as black women, we need to be surrounded by black women of all ages. We know where we've come from and we know where we're going. And in terms of healing, I'm a DV survivor myself, and I think just the embodiment of these practices in terms of healing from violence, when we sit and we think about Western therapies and, you know, that communicative kind of narrative therapy, which is a big part of our culture too, but I think the embodiment and actually embodying and having a space to embody these experiences and release it through movement or through song and embody it in that way, and channel that energy outward, that's what's been so transformative for me in my journey, is having a space to release it. And that's what dance has always been for me. And now I'm so grateful to be in a space where I have the opportunity to share the stories of Ani Shante and Ani Sharon and other amazing, inspiring women in our group through art, through creating productions and sharing their stories, that so many other people can be savvy to, be inspired by, and doing it our way. Yeah.
I love that. And I think as a creative myself, I think about all these different silos or projects that we get put into, and how corporates or government policies try to, you know, help us, when the reality is the root of all evil comes from colonization. And I think that the more that we have conversations, I know in my friend group, very quickly it'll come back to how colonization caused everything, but we also talk about just spiritual wellness. And my dad's actually here tonight, and we've had many conversations where I'll, full disclosure, crying in the lounge room about the pressures of how we exist as mob. And he once showed this analogy of, you know, we are frequency, and if we're going like this, we're uneasy. But once we kind of connect back to spirit, connect back and harmonize a bit into that frequency and work with it in harmony, it does benefit us. But I guess with, you know, the Western lens of mental health and how it's measured, whether it's a mental health plan and these physical manifestations of illness that colonization has caused, I guess, Will, you've worked a lot in that space, and as mob, we feel differently, we react differently. Can you talk to that a little bit in the work that you do?
Yeah, well,
it's
a big question. But I mean, honestly, I think I'm just going to be straight up and say it's a challenge. And, you know, I think, you know, I feel like I've been blessed with the opportunities that I've had to be in spaces where I'm talking to people in that corporate level and around policy. Like, I've worked for government for a few years and just, you know, working on strategies that sort of work around the Western system. And honestly, like, I'm not happy with how it is. Like, it's shit. But the challenge is, as black fellas working in organizations like that and in mainstream, is that we've got to wear so many different hats to influence some change. Like, you know, we've kind of got to be the educator or be the one that holds the cultural load from our family and our communities. And so, like, it's a never-ending journey for us to maintain resilience and to help guide, you know, whatever it is that we're working on to a direction that's going to be better suited for Mo. But at the end of the day, I'm the biggest believer in self-determination. So I think this, you know, if I had the power, I would just say, stop what you're doing. You know, you've created like systemic barriers for all of us. And it doesn't need to be reformed. It needs to be redone. And, you know, give us more opportunities to determine what our healing solutions look like. But, you know, that's if I had a magic wand, I would push that forward. But that's the mindset that I have working in this space, that it's not where it should be right now. And it's a constant battle and change and journey.
Yeah. I think a lot of us would agree that we're not happy with how institutions are treating mob and how they're holding space, whether it's, you know, you're the token black fella in an organization or you're the cultural sign for a gig or a festival. But Crystal, you have quite the legacy in your family, having, you know, Uncle Eddie Mabo as part of your family. And there's a rich history there in, like you mentioned, land rights and all of those different things that are potentially only marketable in NAIDOC Week or Reconciliation Week. Do you find having that legacy as part of your culture, is there more of a pressure placed on you because you're seen as like this, having this huge legacy? And how do you, I guess, manage to have your or navigate your own identity in the bigger picture of the cultural lens with such a huge impact like Uncle Eddie had?
That's a big question.
I know, sorry. We've not got time. I've got to just get it all in there.
Yeah, like definitely my grandfather has a big legacy in this country, but for us and for our people, it's not about the legacy for me itself. It's about the core meaning behind it. And that is land rights and that we are traditional owners to this land. That's the core and that's the heart of it, you know. So for me, being a singer-songwriter that predominantly sings about my culture and identity, it's not about, oh, my grandfather did this or that, and so I've got to do this or that. No, I just have to lead with my heart. That's it. And I think all of us black people, we do that. We lead with our heart and our spirits, and that's what it is for me. For me, it's just being true to who I am and where I come from. Yeah.
And that's giving big staunch energy, I got to say. But I'm sure there's a lot of young people that are listening that potentially have these challenges and don't quite have that embodiment of black power and feminine energy to have those conversations and to stand up against that or resist that. Do you have any advice for young people who may have to question whether they are compromising their values to be seen in an industry, particularly the music industry?
I think, unfortunately, they go hand in hand. I can't find the words. Could you repeat the question?
I guess basically for a lot of young people, like it's very inspiring for you to say that you know who you are in your heart. And I guess for a lot of young people, particularly growing up in a different generation, it's wild out there. What advice can you kind of give people to find their sense of identity or to reclaim their sense of identity when institutions and industries are constantly telling them to be this or be that, or you're too political or you're too this?
I think it can start from very basic things like attending a women's group, you know, learning about the country that you're on, learning about your tribes and who your people are, and exploring your identity. And making it a promise to yourself that you will continue to explore that and maintain that. Mm. Yeah. So it can be very challenging and difficult in a system that is not supportive of that. But I think that's what makes us resilient.
Yeah.
Is that we continue to fight for various different things. And one of those things are also our identities. Mm.
Alira, I'm seeing a lot of enthusiastic nods there.
I just wanted to add that recently myself, Anishante, and Anisharam went on a trip to Canada, Vancouver, for the Worldwide First Nations Healing Our Spirit Conference. And we were with Indigenous people from all over the world. We got to attend, fundraised our way there, might I add. Yeah, being a part of that journey was incredible, but the essence of what I really got out of that coming back was confirmation of what we were doing and also saturating your life with culture, saturating it. Like, I think in Western society, and I mean, I cop a lot of hate online, like I'm kind of coming up in the TikTok realm and things like this, and when I will post videos of my paint up or if I'm wearing certain things, there'll be so much hate around that. And there's this idea that if you want to dress traditionally, you should just go back and live traditionally, and you can't like mix this contemporary version of being what being a black woman is. Like, I can't create my own identity in this new world with also my traditional practices embodied. And so I think that in itself, saturating our life in culture, reclaiming our traditional practices, seeking out people in your community, your aunties, your elders, yarn with them more. Even if it's not in your family, find people in community. There's so many people out there doing amazing things. Mm. It's just about connecting yourself, because our identity is everything. Mm. It really is. And no white institution, no textbook, no nothing can tell us where our identity is.
Well, that was the first half of the yarn I facilitated at BMAC last week. So tune in next week for the rest of that incredibly insightful yarn. I'm so grateful to always have the chance to talk with these panelists and guests on the show. But until next week, stay deadly.
No more whispering in our mind.
Let's talk Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. on AAA Murray Country, National Indigenous Radio Service, and iHeartRadio. You can catch up on AAA.org.au, proudly supported by the Community Broadcast Foundation.